Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering details on the new conditions and safety measures put in place related to Kingston's Integrated Care Hub.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
At their last meeting, City Council passed additional conditions for the Integrated Care Hub to maintain their funding from the city. The motion was brought forward by Councillor Gregory Ridge. Councillor for the Kingstown District, where the Integrated Care Hub, the Consumption Treatment Services Site, and the Bell Park Encampment are located. The Integrated Care Hub has been at 661 Montreal Street since 2020, providing 24/7 low-barrier services to vulnerable residents, covering immediate needs such as safety, food, and rest, and longer-term needs such as addiction and mental health services. Councillor Ridge proposed that Addiction and Mental Health Services, KFLNA, the lead on Integrated Care Hub operations, submit a security and safety plan which is, quote, considerate of client, staff, neighborhood, and community safety, as well as form a community consultation group in order to maintain funding from the city for the Integrated Care Hub. Along with these conditions, it was also proposed that city staff collect data from Kingston Police, Frontenac Paramedic Services, and Kingston Fire and Rescue regarding calls and visits to the Integrated Care Hub and the surrounding neighborhood since the hub was established in 2020, to compare with data of other areas in the city. This data collection and analysis will be completed by the end of March 2025. This motion also comes after the events of September 12th, where two people were killed in an attack on Montreal Street, close to the Bell Park Encampment and the Integrated Care Hub. The Integrated Care Hub has been closed since, and the neighboring Consumption Treatment Services site just reopened on October 17th. Councillor Ridge opened the discussion, sharing his reasoning behind bringing forward the motion.
We have to recognize that these services are essential, that they save lives. We also have to recognize that there has been a negative impact on the community there, and I'm sure that once the data is reviewed, that we'll have a better sense of what that negative impact is. But anecdotally, based on the hundreds of interactions I've had with constituents that live in that area, they would overwhelmingly say that that's the case. And we also have to take that into consideration. The only way that we as a municipality can make a positive difference is to recognize that both of these realities are true and to move forward in a way that works for everyone. And if we don't do that, we're going to be doomed to fail over and over and over again. Ultimately, these are a way to try and create trust in the community again, to create trust in the city, to create trust with our partnerships, and to address the needs of everybody here. Let's be clear about what this motion is not. This is not about punishing the ICH. This is not about punishing the staff. This is not about punishing people using your services. This is about trying to help everybody.
Councillors discussed the motion, mostly agreeing on the importance of the added conditions, and with hope that this is a move in the right direction for all Kingston residents.
Simultaneously, we can support consumption treatment centers and the services of the ICH and still recognize that is having an impact on the community. I remember canvassing 2 years ago up Montreal Street, which is several blocks away, and members of Rideau Heights talked about the impact that the ICH was having in several blocks away from it. So it is having an impact on the community here. I always think the city works better when we get as many people involved and engaged in the service as possible. When we take away any misconceptions of what it is, any misconception of what a service is. And I think that that's a key component here that in some ways has been kind of missing, that component of bringing the community on board with this. And I'm I'm heartened by this, and I hope it works out well, because I think we have to prove to the province of Ontario, which I want everyone to keep in mind, that this works. Consumption treatment centers are under the eye of the province, and we have to make sure that we're showing that these services are vital and essential. They save lives. And I mean, the part on data collection, that just makes sense. We have to, the more evidence-based decision-making we can have, the better policy outcomes we will do.
This is a really interesting case of multiple truths, which is something I find we talk about often around here. So as Councillor Tozzo mentioned, yes, we have these services, and yes, they are critically important, and yes, they are impacting the near neighbors and neighbors that are a bit further away as well. The time has come that, yes, we absolutely need a community consultation group. It just makes sense. So I want to thank you for bringing this. As you mentioned, Councillor Ridge, you know, there's a lot that we can't control, but I think that this is one small step in addition to the other items in your motion that can have an impact, and acknowledge that, you know, we care about everyone in our community, and that doesn't mean decisions are easy, and sometimes that means you're displeasing others to please, you know, certain people, but at the heart of it all, I think what we're trying to do is the right thing.
While the killings last month were not mentioned in the original presentation of the motion by Councillor Ridge, Councillor Jimmy Hassan brought the issue forward during the discussion.
I think seeing those incidents few times, it is the right time to put everything into the right direction, work together, inclusively the city staff, all the community stakeholders, the organizations, and everyone who is involved there.
Councillor Ridge acknowledged this in his closing statement.
The terrible tragedy of September 12th has been mentioned by several other councillors, and I purposefully avoided mentioning it at the beginning with the deaths of Taylor Wilkinson and John Hood. And while that is an impetus for renewed focus on safety and in general, I think with all of the partnership, this motion seeks a more holistic approach to what's been going on. Noting publicly that those incidents did happen in the encampment and not in the ICH itself. This motion is an effort to recognize an incredibly difficult situation, an incredibly complex one, and the only way that we can ever solve issues like this is to have an honest conversation about what's going on. And if we polarize ourselves to one side or the other, where we're only recognizing, you know, the benefits as opposed to the harms, then we're not doing anyone any favors. And we're not going to get a solution that works for everybody.
Just before the end of the discussion, Councillor Jeff McLaren brought concerns to the table about these extra steps leading to overworking and burnout for ICH staff, and how this could impact the future of these services and Kingston's only safe consumption site.
So what I see here is that they're being forced to do extra work when they're already short-staffed. It seems to me that it's a way to get them to do a worse job by overwork, and I think we're contributing to that. We heard from somebody who seemed to be connected to this that they do not want the extra work, and at the same time, we need some of that data. That data, that's the other interesting thing about this. Based on what I've heard, partly at AMO and some of the requirements that I've heard recently from the provincial government, I think they're looking for a reason to kill this. And I think this is gonna help. Not sure what to do yet.
The motion passed with a vote of 12-1, with Councillor McLaren opposed. Addiction and Mental Health Services KFLNA will be taking the lead to form the Community Consultation Group before the end of November. Councillors expressed hope that the community consultation meetings will be held on a regular basis by winter. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Laurie from CFRC 101.9 FM for that story. Next is Dinah Jansen reading a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about the controversial reasons for the cancellation of a planned drive-through vaccination clinic in Kingston.
Thank you, Jesse. The Frontenac Doctors Clinic canceled its planned drive-through vaccine clinic last weekend because the Ontario Health Insurance Plan, or OHIP, wouldn't cover its expenses. Unfortunately, that is just the beginning of the government-run health plan's unsympathetic cost-saving measures, according to local healthcare providers. The Frontenac Doctors drive-through COVID-19 influenza vaccination clinic was planned for Saturday, October 26th, in the St. Lawrence College parking lot in Kingston. However, the over 600 patients scheduled to attend that event now have to visit the Frontenac Doctors Clinic at 189 King Street West for their shots because OHIP refused to compensate the doctors for work done outside the four walls of their building or by medical students in training. Additionally, the government-run health plan is also attempting to claw back payment for the thousands of vaccines administered in similar circumstances during the throes of the pandemic. Dr. Elaine Ma noted that there is precedent for OHIP's decision to revoke funding, but that it is drawn from a 2001 bulletin memo. That memo stated that billing cannot be issued for the work done by medical students or any work that occurred outside the four walls of a professional practice. Therefore, all those clinics must now be paid for by the doctors who ran them, Ma explained. Ma said the clinic's plan for Saturday had been in the works for months. The plan was to distribute vaccines in the most convenient and safe way possible for over 600 of their patients. Ma pointed out that the vaccination clinic is a learning opportunity for medical students. Ma emphasized that if doctors can't bill for work performed by medical students, the students will no longer be able to practice their skills. Ma noted that denying learning opportunities for medical students will have huge repercussions for the future of healthcare. Additionally, OHIP is trying to apply the memo retroactively to all of the vaccines doled out during the pandemic. It is disheartening, Ma said, that OHIP seems to have found a 20-year-old loophole that technically says they can request that money back. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forstel from The Kingstonist for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell reading a story from local journalism initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about upcoming IIHF World Junior Hockey Championship hockey games being played in Kingston.
Thank you, Dinah. Kingston will welcome the best of the best young hockey players in December as Slush Puppy Place has been selected to host a pre-tournament game. The home rink of the Kingston Frontenacs will play host to an exhibition game between Team Slovakia and the defending World Junior Hockey Champions, Team USA, on December 21st, with each team prepping for the annual tournament that will kick off in Ottawa on the evening of Boxing Day, December 26th. The pre-tournament game could help showcase Kingston's ability to put on major hockey events, roughly a year and a half after missing out on a Memorial Cup bid. In a release from Hockey Canada, the organization announced seven different communities would be hosting pre-tournament games between December 19th and 23rd, with two games in the nation's capital and other games in Arnprior, Belleville, Brockville, Cornwall, Hawkesbury, and Kingston. In a news release from Hockey Canada, Senior Vice President of Revenue, Fan Experience, and Community Impact, Dean McIntosh, said this year's tournament will celebrate hockey in communities all throughout Eastern Ontario. All 10 teams competing in the tournament will play in pre-tournament games, and all three played by Canada will be hosted in Ottawa at TD Place. Canada will be looking for redemption after an early exit in last year's tournament, and they are expected to have an even stronger prospect pool to draw from than usual. Since the tournament began in 1977, Canada has taken home 5 bronze medals, 10 silvers, and 20 golds. Tickets for these pre-tournament exhibition games are available for purchase through the Hockey Canada website. Thank you to Owen Fullerton from YGK News for that story. Now over to Dinah Jansen reading a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the rehabilitation of Water Street in Gananoque.
Thank you, Jesse. Last week, in a special council meeting at Gananoque Intermediate Secondary School, council passed a bylaw authorizing the mayor and clerk to sign an agreement to complete the rehabilitation of the Water Street retaining wall. The agreement with Fidelity Engineering and Construction, Inc., for an upset limit of $653,299, was passed unanimously. An investigation into the Water Street Swing Bridge was conducted after significant rainfall from August 8th through 10th. During that intense rainfall, Water Street at the east end of the bridge was overflowing and the storm sewer wasn't taking the water. Council directed town staff to complete a permanent solution design for the compromised retaining wall on Water Street at the eastern approach of the swing bridge and obtain quotes from qualified contractors. Town staff worked with Greer Galloway Group, Inc. staff to design a permanent solution for the compromised roadway on Water Street. Five contractors were approached directly with the design on October 11th and were requested to submit a quote on October 17th outlining their price to complete the work immediately. The previously contracted works for the structural repairs of the Water Street Swing Bridge have now been completed and the contractor has left the site.
Thank you to Keith Dempsey from the Brockville Recorder and Times for that story. Over now to Ted Evans, the local journalism initiative reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island, with a story about Loyalist Township's decision to deny a proposed amendment to a zoning bylaw in Odessa.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. After hearing concerns from William Street residents, Loyalist Township Council denied staff's recommendation to approve applications for an official plan amendment and zoning bylaw amendment related to a proposed 45-unit development in Odessa. The meeting took place on Tuesday, the 22nd. Brookland Fine Homes has been looking into the development since 2022. They're looking to build three four-story dwellings consisting of 15 units each. From the pre-consultation meeting on January 11, 2022, followed by multiple open houses to obtain input from the public, concerns have mainly been related to traffic, safety issues, aged water and sewer infrastructure, parking, proximity to the 401, and emergency service access. The proposed amendment to the official plan was to redesignate the property from commercial and low-density residential to medium-density residential. The zoning bylaw amendment would have been to address a number of site-specific performance standards to facilitate the development. Council ultimately voted against the motion and put forth another motion to deny the company's applications. Residents of William Street who attended the meeting noted their opinions and concerns about the new development.
From the road width to the off-ramp, from the 401 to the hydro easement, to the condition and the capacity of the road and the water and sewer system, this rezoning and development does not fit on this piece of land. If regular citizens of the township can research and clearly demonstrate how this goes against established limits and allowances, it baffles me that anyone could possibly recommend to accept this proposal with a clear conscience.
This is the third time that I've made a presentation to council on this proposal. The first time was with the previous council with a petition that was presented and signed by all but two houses on William Street opposing the development. The two houses not signed were because I couldn't reach the residents.
I know they keep referring to Odessa like Napanee, which I don't think is a fair comparison.
The official plan was developed to protect areas by preventing incompatible uses. This is an incompatible use. What the builder is proposing is urban sprawl in an area that is too small to accommodate his plans for the monetary benefit of one or two individuals at the expense of the William Street residents who purchased our homes because of the uniqueness and peacefulness of the neighborhood. We don't want it.
Planning Supervisor James Griffin explains the decision made by staff to recommend approving the applications.
In regards to alternative locations, this is the location that's presented to us, and we as staff can't direct private landowners to develop on locations. We rather are provided applications and we review them against the tests of the provincial policy statement and the official plan. In this instance, we have reviewed those thoroughly and are confident that it meets the tests of those policy documents.
Councillor Paul Broderick was one of two councillors who showed support for approving the applications.
I feel for the residents with the concerns, and the three things I heard were parking, speed, and access to Highway 2. I'm just wondering if that's an issue that should be dealt with outside of this in terms of no parking signs, maybe it becomes a community safety zone, upgrading the park and so on. But I do think given that it's consistent with the PPS, anybody has the right to appeal, I believe. And I think on appeal, this is a solid, application of that policy statement.
Councillor Mike Buderich also supported approving the applications.
I know it is not exactly what people in the area are exactly looking for. Unfortunately, the province has skewed the mandate for housing to make sure that things get pushed forward, and this does fit everything that they're asking for.
The other four members of council didn't agree, and the applications were not approved. Councillor Lorna Willis explains her reasoning.
I fully understand the need for more housing. I fully support the need for more housing and development in the township. I have a concern that people in this community moved to this community with a certain understanding. They looked at that piece of property and thought the most that would happen is a few houses, maybe six. To turn that into 90, I think is unfair. That's a very violent change to that very small neighborhood. The zoning, the type of property, I've lived in stacked townhouses. That was the first home I ever owned. I think that that's a great model for intensification, but let's put it in newer subdivisions that are being planned so that all of the neighbors know what they're dealing with when they buy their homes. I just can't support it on William Street.
Councillor Jake Ennis notes the amount of opposition from residents.
I think in general, I have concerns about its compatibility. I acknowledge the applicant's proposal and staff's analysis. I still don't find it to be 100% compatible with Loyalist official plan policies around medium density and the requirements for gaining a medium density designation in this particular location. I also think we have to acknowledge the amount of resident opposition to the proposal. We get lots of proposals. There's zero opposition. We get lots of proposals. There's a handful. In my experience, we get a lot that there's this much opposition. So I'd just like to acknowledge that as well.
Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend explained to council why he couldn't support approving the applications.
I think it's worth saying that this is an example of what happens when the provincial response to the need for housing lets the market decide, because this is what happens. You get for-profit developers who determine what we need, and you get provincial legislation that essentially gives them carte blanche. I mean, the proponent's representative basically told us we had to do this because it conforms to what our targets are and what we're being, you know, told to do by the province. And to a certain extent, that's true. But I think at face value to what my colleagues said, this is an example of a development that I would argue we don't necessarily need in terms of the housing that it is. It's certainly not what I would consider affordable, and it's not wanted by the community. And it's just an unfortunate situation in my mind, but for the reasons that my colleague stated, I too will not be supporting.
Since 2022, the company has undertaken a number of studies and reports in relation to the land and development. This includes a geotechnical report, a noise impact study, a stormwater management report, a hydrogeological assessment, a photometric plan, topographical survey, and site plans, and overall site and architectural plans. A formal pre-consultation meeting was held on January 11, 2022. A public open house was held on September 8, 2022, followed by statutory public meetings on October 11, 2022 and December 11, 2023. At that time, it was decided that once comments from the township departments, agencies, and public had been addressed, an official recommendation would be brought forth to council. Various revisions have been made to the proposal since it was initially proposed to address public, staff, and agency feedback. If a site plan control application is not approved for the development by October 22, 2026, the allocation will be made available to other properties. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. A chilly and at times wet Monday and Tuesday gave way to an unseasonably warm Wednesday, and that has continued into Thursday, October 31st, with a daytime high of 22 degrees and a mix of sun and cloud. However, the 60% chance of precipitation overnight appears to be cooling things off again, as Friday, November 1st, we will see a daytime high of 11 degrees with clouds, dropping down to negative 3 overnight. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, November 2nd, daytime high of 9 and sunny, so still a crisp and a bit of a chilly day. Warming up a little bit Sunday, November 3rd, we've got a high of 12 degrees and a mix of sun and cloud. Monday, November 4th, high of about 15 with an overnight low of 7. And Tuesday, November 5th, high of 14 with a 40% chance of precipitation. That is your Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. I'll send it over to the team from CFRC 101.9 FM for the community concert and events calendar for the week.
Now it's time for your CFRC community events calendar. Have an event in Kingston that you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us today at cfrc.ca. If you're looking to get festive on Thursday, October 31st, starting at 7:15, folks can enjoy Dark Night at Fort Bright. Enjoy scary attractions with costumed actors and your friends or family. Tickets are $30. Folks can also enjoy the Halloween Parade starting at Skeleton Park, a family-friendly event starting at 4:30. Daft Brewing is hosting the Turnout Halloween Drag Show and Dance Party starting at 7 p.m. Tickets are $30 at the door. On Friday, November 1st, the YMCA will host its weekly Fresh Food Market from 9:30 to 12:30. A great opportunity to get fresh food at great prices. Also on Friday, head out to Lemoyne Point for an Autumn Forest Therapy Walk led by Stana Luxford Audi starting at 11:30 a.m. On Saturday, November 2nd, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Finishing off the week on Sunday, November 3rd, get up early and head over to Runner's Choice for an early morning long run starting at 8:30 a.m. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 2 p.m. featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. Next up is Noah with your CFRC concerts calendar for this week.
And now it's time for the CFRC concerts calendar for this week. On Halloween, folks can head out to see Beats Workin' performing at the RCHA from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Also on Thursday, Lucanus returns with The Man from Hell performing live at the Musiki Cafe from 8 to 11 p.m. Admission is free. Don't miss the All Hallows Eve Electric Shakedown at the Toucan running from 9:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. Doors open at 8, admission is free, featuring local acts like Strange Happenings, The Mature Themes, and Arachnia. You can also head over to the mansion for a rocking good time with Cassador, Carnelian, Squid Pistol, Is Bister, Roses and Revst with DJ Devious in the Wine Cellar. $1,000 cash prize for the best costume. Doors at 8, bands at 9. Tickets are $15 in advance, $20 at the door. On Friday, don't forget to stop in for free karaoke at the Buckle starting at 9 p.m. Lucas Oak will be performing at Royal Tavern 2.0, 5 to 7 p.m. as well on Friday evening. Admission is free. Also on Friday, SOS, the ABBA Experience, will be live at the Spire starting at 7:30 p.m. For ticket information, visit thespirekingston.org. The Celtic Kitchen Party will play live at Tiernan Oak Irish Pub. Admission is free. The show runs from 9 p.m. to midnight. On Saturday, Sarah Sagal Lazar will be live at Hotel Wolf Island from 8:30 to 11 p.m. Also on Saturday, Head Over Heels will be live at the Cove Inn from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Justin Sleeth and Jack Baker will also perform live music at the Creekside Bar and Grill from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Also on Saturday, Soulish Fall Tour with Lost Faculty, the 3rd Street Band, and ChatGPT will perform at the Mansion from 8 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. James Vincent McMorrow will be live at the Broom Factory. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. On Sunday, the Gertrudes will be live at the Broom Factory. The show starts at 3:30 p.m., and admission is pay what you can. Also on Sunday, Harmon in Space will take place live at the Grand Theater. This family-friendly show runs from 2:30 to 4 p.m. Tickets are $20 for adults, $15 for students, and $10 for children. The McMillan's Camp Boys will be performing live at the Cove Inn from 1 to 4 p.m., and you can stick around for Eric and Megan taking the stage from 5 to 8 p.m. Have a concert you'd like listed on CFRC's website and announced on our airwaves? Reach out on our website contact page at cfrc.ca.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.